So, hello there. As you'll know, it's been a couple of months since I did my last podcast. I finished up doing a series on the COVID-19 pandemic and some of the ethical issues it raises. Since then, my time has been taken up with many other administrative and distracting duties associated with my job and other parts of my life. I'm sure many of you have suffered from a similar fate. But I'm hoping now over the next few months to return to a more regular schedule of podcast episodes. And I'll be going back to the traditional focus of this podcast to some extent, although I'm not going to lose sight of some other important issues as we go along. So most of the episodes I'm planning for the next couple of months will be focusing on philosophy of technology and ethics of technology, with maybe some deviations. Okay, so my first episode back after the break is going to be about the topic of explainable AI. And my guest for this podcast is Scott Robbins. So Scott is currently finishing up his PhD in the ethics of artificial intelligence at TU Delft, or Technical University of Delft in the Netherlands. He has a bachelor's in computer science from California State University and a master's in the ethics of technology from the University of Twente. He is a founding member of the Foundation for Responsible Robotics and a member of the 4TU Center for Ethics and Technology. Now, Scott's work is generally skeptical about the use of AI as a solution to grand societal problems, and he is an advocate for what he calls boring artificial intelligence. And we discuss what that means and why it's potentially not as boring as it might sound in the podcast. So without further ado, I'm going to hand over to the interview I did with Scott on the topic of explainability in AI. Okay, so Scott, we're going to talk today about the explainability of AI. Now, this is a topic that's attracted quite a lot of attention and buzz in recent years. There's a fear out there that AI decision-making systems are black boxes and are opaque to human reason, and this has led to calls for them to be explainable. And these calls have resulted in some legal actions, at least within the European Union, where the general data protection includes what many people believe is a right to explanation. Although I believe that phrase is not explicitly used in the text of the GDPR, but it is used a lot in the commentaries on it. Now, you've recently written an article called A Misdirected Principle with a Catch, The Explicability of AI, that presents a somewhat skeptical take on the whole explainability debate. And we're going to be talking about that article today. So let me just start with a general question, which is, why are people concerned about the explainability, or as you put it, the explicability of AI? Where does that fear come from?
Yeah, so I think the recent explosion of artificial intelligence that we've seen all over the news and in academia has seen its outputs being used for just a variety of things that we consider to be quite important, like judicial sentencing, loan rejections and approvals, or ranking candidates for a job. These decisions clearly have an impact on our lives. Like, if we don't get that job or we don't get that loan, it's a problem for us going forward, or at least it hurts our life chances. So we want these decisions to be based on considerations that are relevant and are worried that these considerations may be based on completely irrelevant factors, and that not only irrelevant, but might reinforce biases that were already, you know, happened towards marginalized groups. So we don't want to be, for example, we don't want to be rejected for a loan or a job because of the color of our skin. And with an opaque system, we won't know if that has happened or not. So this isn't just a scenario that academics and ethicists have thought up as a worry. We've actually seen these worries play out in real scenarios. For example, recently Apple has a credit card, and you'd fill out an application and you get a credit limit. Well, a bunch of people pointed out, high profile people, that they had submitted applications, identical applications, to their wives, but their wives received significantly reduced credit limit. So the implication is that gender was taken as a consideration for what kind of credit limit someone should have. And we feel that that would be, a prejudiced thing to do, something that we shouldn't be basing such a decision on. So there's a concern that this is going to continue to happen, and that we may not have a celebrity like Steve Wozniak in the Apple case sounding the alarm. And in general, this is not something that should happen. And so these these problems of opacity that we've pointed out sound really scary and everything, but we may not have found the other ones. There might be many that are yet undiscovered. So I think that's what's driving this fascination with explainable AI.
Yeah, I just want to actually have a quick note on terminology as well here, because I see different words floating around in the conversation. And now you talk about explicability in your article. A lot of the conversation that I've seen is about explainability. But then there is also a much longer standing debate, I guess, about the transparency of decision making. Do you think that there's any difference between those concepts, or are they already talking about the same basic thing when it comes to artificial intelligence anyway?
Right. So I think that I use explicability in the article because that's how Luciana Floridi and colleagues described it in their paper, where they proposed the four bioethics principles along with explicability as principles for artificial intelligence. So I wanted to maintain some consistency in the wording there. However, I really use explainability and explicability interchangeably, and at least how I read it, I don't see too much difference between the two, at least in this debate. However, I do think transparency should be treated quite differently, and at least in the AI ethics debate, refers to a different ethical issue. So to start, explicability and explainability, and I use it in the paper this way at least, refer to AI's ability to provide us with considerations that contributed to the output of the algorithm. For example, if an algorithm classifies a picture as a banana, it might use the fact that the object was the color yellow as a consideration. And we would want this kind of list of considerations that contributed to these outputs and gives us some information about how it came to that decision. But transparency refers in this debate to the process of development and implementation of AI. So being transparent about an AI algorithm then would be maybe publishing details about the training data used, what the accuracy of the algorithm is, what its possible outputs are, what the inputs should look like. It's all this information that helps us make decisions about where these algorithms should be used. So if an autonomous car, for instance, was only trained on sunny highways in California, then we may hesitate to use them in where I live, The Hague, the Netherlands, in the winter, because it hasn't ever experienced that before and may not work properly. So we can know all of this stuff without an explanation about how each individual output is achieved. That transparency still helps us. It still solves this or overcomes this moral issue.
Right. I mean, so just on a purely conceptual level then, would you view transparency as a broader concept, or that subsumes explicability, or completely separate ideas, and explainability is a much narrower decision-specific thing, and transparency is about socio-technical systems in general, how they create these technologies?
Exactly. So I treat them as separate, because I think explainability and explicability are referring really to the singular outputs. So each individual output, how did that happen? Whereas transparency, if we wanted to talk about how outputs are achieved, we might talk about the methodology, what specific type of machine learning algorithm was used, you know, how many layers deep was the deep neural network, stuff like that, that might help engineers understand, oh, was that a good methodology to use for this problem or not? But it's not going to get us anywhere towards explainability that we're talking about now.
Okay, very good. I mean, that makes sense. And I think then, as we might see in this conversation, that transparency would probably be important in your argument then, in terms of how we evaluate and deploy AI systems for, in particular, decision-making forums or contexts.
Right? Absolutely. In fact, I have another paper that I argue exactly that, where it's talking about, well, listen, we may not be able to explain each individual decision, but there's so much more information that we could demand and ask for that would help us deploy these systems.
Okay, we might try and maybe fold in some observations about that towards the end, once we've sort of laid out your view on explainability. So let me start then with another question about explainability. And I'm probably going to lapse into using that term throughout this, but if you want to use explicability, it's fine, and people should be able to follow what we're talking about. So why is it considered to be a virtue or something that is morally important Why is there so much call for this? How does it fit into our political moral views about decision-making systems?
Right. So I think that it's a really good question, and it's something that I grappled with while writing this paper, because I think it was a little unclear to me. Like, there's a lot of good examples about when we would want explicability, like getting rejected for a loan, we'd want the decision explained. But there wasn't exactly a conceptualization where we say, well, this is what explainability is really good for. This is why we want it. And so part of the paper was dealing with this. And I argue that it's good because it allows us to step towards meaningful human control. And that meaningful human control is kind of this buzzword that we're using that says, well, there's still a human being behind the scenes or a part of this process that is still the one that is deserving of moral responsibility over these decisions. And in order for a human being to be able to exert this control, the information, they might need a lot of information to say, well, should I accept this machine's decision or reject it or override it or challenge it? And if you're going to be able to do that, you kind of need the explanation about how it came to that decision. So if somebody gets rejected for a loan and you're wondering whether they really should be rejected for a loan, if there's no explanation about how that output was reached, then you have no way of challenging it, and you have no information with which to do that. So the information provided by explainable AI would then allow for moral responsibility to remain with humans. We wouldn't have these situations where institutions are delegating more and more decisions regarding that affect our lives to algorithms, and in deepening this institutional opacity that sort of makes a mess out of moral accountability and responsibility. In short, I'm just arguing that explainability is being proposed as this instrumental value towards achieving meaningful human control.
So it's an attempt to avoid a kind of Kafka-esque outcome where things just happen to us and nobody can tell us why and nobody is held to account for those decisions. As you say, you use that term meaningful human control. That has a particular definition within the philosophical literature. Maybe you could just briefly outline what that means and how people use that concept.
Right. Well, it's a concept that started with the autonomous weapon systems debate, and there's a lot of literature saying that no matter what happens in an autonomous weapon system, there should be a human in control of targeting a human being for death. That's where it started, and now it's kind of being taken out of that debate and put into a general debate about artificial intelligence. And in the beginning, it was about, kind of where the human being is involved in the process. So we talk about in the loop or out of the loop. Is there a human in the loop, meaning does a human have to do something in order for the decision to be acted upon? So if an autonomous weapon system targets somebody and decides, well, this person should be killed, then a human being has to kind of be there to say, yes, indeed, that's true. Or you just have a human on the loop that kind of oversees what this algorithm is doing to make sure that everything's going smoothly in a way. And so in the literature now, we're trying to argue about, well, how can we actually obtain this meaningful human control? And we use the word meaningful because in the examples I use, just in the loop, on the loop, or without an explanation about how it reached these decisions, we may not have the information to make that control meaningful. We may, in fact, have the control to stop the algorithm, but we don't have information to actually make that decision.
Yeah, so, I mean, the way I've seen it described by some people is that to have meaningful human control, you have to be able... The technical system has to track the reasons of human operators, and you need to be able to trace back the decisions to at least one human operator. And so a colleague of mine, and you might know him as well, Sven Nyholm, has called this the FedEx theory of responsibility, because it's about tracking and tracing, which I think is kind of clever. Right. So the overall argument or suggestion you're making is that the focus on explainability in this debate is really a focus on ensuring meaningful human control, where that really means ensuring that there is moral accountability and moral responsibility for the kinds of decisions that get made, for example, in rejecting somebody for a loan application or targeting somebody for some kind of policing intervention using a predictive policing algorithm, right? Now, in the paper, you draw a distinction between that kind of moral value of explainability and a separate value, which is like the epistemic value of explainability. And I just wanted to discuss that in a bit of detail, because I don't know if I entirely agree with this perspective that you have. So I think there's a value to understanding something. So explanations to me are valuable because they help us to understand things. And understanding can be valuable irrespective of whether there is moral accountability for decision making. And this is something I worry about a lot with the deployment of AI systems in like kind of non-bureaucratic or non-corporate context, like the use of it in scientific inquiry, or to some extent, let's say, in the world of games, although it might be a lower stake realm there. And because I worry that, you know, we achieve certain results or outcomes using AI systems, but we can't fit them neatly into an overarching explanation that is understandable to us. And if we don't have that understanding, we lose something of value. I think it's a good thing for humans to be able to understand the world around them. And I would worry about a world in which everything becomes more opaque to us. I've written about this in a separate context where I have said that the widespread deployment of AI could lead to a new era of techno superstition, where you know, we're all kind of just dancing around these AI systems, and we accept their outputs, their judgments, their conclusions, but we don't really know why. And we've lost some insight into the world that we would have hoped to have had.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. And I hope that I didn't in the paper try to say that this episode, this value of understanding how these outputs are achieved, is not valuable at all. I think there is quite a bit of value in there. The distinction I wanted to make in this paper was more about why this explainability is being proposed as a principle of AI. A principle implies a demand, a requirement that if you don't have it, you can't use it. And I thought intuitively in the beginning, I thought, well, that's just can't be true. It seems odd that the chess playing algorithm shouldn't be allowed to be out there just simply because we don't understand how it makes the moves it makes. And to make it a more relevant, maybe a more a bigger stakes situation, you know, if we could develop an algorithm that was able to detect an earthquake hours before it happened, something we don't have the ability to do now, there would be a significant good in achieving that, with or without an explanation. Now, of course, the seismologists would really, really want an explanation so that they could further understand earthquakes, and they're going to try to get that. I mean, I think that's it's a human thing to do. It's a scientific thing to do to try to get that understanding. I don't think they're just going to say this is the end of the story. We already have what we need. We would use this in order to save many people's lives, and it would be odd to say, well, it fails the principle of explainability, so we shouldn't have it. And this principle is being described as a principle because we're saying we demand it, and we're using these examples like loans and everything. But that is not to say there's no epistemic value in understanding. And I think that in the beginning of this paper, I wanted to write it as like there's no value in explainability for AI. And I quickly realized this problem that there is a lot of value. It's just not a necessary value. And while we might be better off if we understood, we don't necessarily want to get rid of the value of AI if we can't achieve that understanding.
So if we limit ourselves to the view that the importance of this, at least in the context of this debate, is to ensure some kind of moral accountability over systems, and maybe that'll help to prevent harmful decision making by those systems. I mean, how confident are we that that's true? I mean, will providing explanations to people actually guarantee greater accountability? I'm guessing it's a more complex route to ensuring accountability, right?
Right. I don't think it's a guarantee at all, but it definitely provides a clear picture of moral responsibility, whether we gain access to that picture or not. I mean, I don't know if you know, Google or Facebook, whether or not they have explanations for the decisions regarding how posts are taken down. You know, if they have those explanations, that doesn't mean they're going to provide us with those explanations. And that doesn't mean they're going to hold people accountable that should be held accountable for those decisions. But it at least makes it possible. And I think if we look at moral responsibility, we at least have to do something wrong. And in this case, in order to do something wrong, we need to allow a decision to be made based on a consideration that is irrelevant or unethical. If we don't have that information, we can't really, I don't think we can really be held morally responsible, because we didn't know anything was happening, and we didn't do anything wrong. But once we have this information, well, yeah, you can still not act on it. You can still act on it in a nefarious way, and we'll always have that situation where people do things for the wrong reasons. But at least the moral responsibility lies with them, and we have a chance of holding them accountable. Not that it's guaranteed. I don't, in this messy world, I don't think that's guaranteed, no matter what systems we have.
Yeah. So, I mean, my question was probably unfairly framed, but yeah. So it seems like explainability might be necessary for some of these virtues or goods, but not sufficient to win the other kinds of rights or entitlements to challenge decisions and forums in which we can do that effectively in order to guarantee any kind of accountability in practice. Now, this is all just by way of setup as well, this conversation so far, because the paper that you've written is, as I said, a little bit skeptical of the principle of explicability. So maybe you could go into your argument then as to why you're a little bit skeptical. In particular, why do you think that current calls for explicability are misguided or misdirected?
Right. So if a decision is reached that has a significant effect on a person, meaning that it could restrict their autonomy. You know, we have algorithms talking about placing people on no-fly lists or denying them a job that I've used before. It will be of ethical concern that this decision was made based on reasoning that is compatible with liberal democratic values, at least in liberal democratic countries. So the way that we could ensure this is by having an explanation of what considerations played a part in that decision being reached. But The problem that I would have with explainability as a principle of AI is that this applies, this kind of reasoning applies, this demand for an explanation, no matter how the decision was made. So whether it was a judge, a hiring committee, an algorithm, even a magic eight ball, it doesn't matter. If this is the process that you're using to come up with this decision regarding, you know, denying somebody a loan or hiring somebody or something like that, then we would demand an explanation. So a dean at a university, for example, who has an interest in having a particular person hired, wouldn't just stop asking, or just wouldn't refrain from asking why a person was denied the job just because the decision wasn't made by an algorithm. We demand that either way. And this is all to say that the property requiring an explanation really attaches to actions and the decisions themselves, not, and the context that they're in, not the decision-making entity or the process by which this decision was made. We aren't going to really care. If you're denied a job, you don't really care. Oh, was it an algorithm? Yes, then I demand an explanation. Now you're going to demand an explanation either way. So I find that it's a bit odd to require this of AI in this like particular sense, instead of focusing on, well, which decisions do we actually require explanations for? That seems to be a much more clear, it seems much more in line with our thinking about demanding explanations.
Yeah, I mean, so I agree with that. And it makes sense as well in terms of if you analogize it to human decision-making, and when do we expect explanations for human decision-making? It seems that we don't demand explanations for every single decision that anyone makes in their lives. We demand them for certain kinds of decisions in certain contexts.
Right.
Yeah. So we don't insist on the general explainability of human behavior, although, right, again, psychologists might be interested in that. But from a kind of political, moral perspective, we care about the explainability of some aspects of human decision making. And so it makes sense for the two to be analogous in that respect. OK, so we have a reason for thinking that current calls for explicability are misdirected in some sense. There's another aspect to your paper which is quite important, which is that comes from the technical difficulties of creating explainable AI. at least the modern kind of machine learning forms of AI. And maybe you can get into the distinctions between the two forms in how you answer this question. So why is it so difficult to create explainable AI? And I suppose the follow-up question then is, do you think we'll ever have a technical solution to the problem of explainability with AI?
Right. Well, I must preface this that I'm not an AI developer, so but I will still try to speculate on whether we'll have a technical solution. So first, I just want to say a little bit about the difference between artificial intelligence and machine learning. Machine learning is underneath the umbrella of artificial intelligence, and it's kind of the engine for which many of these the latest hype on surrounding AI and many of the achievements that AI has done in the last decade or so has been driven by machine learning. And traditional AI was just a kind of a representation of how we make decisions now. You would have people getting together and saying, well, how do we decide how to give somebody a loan? Well, we check their debt to income ratio, you know, how high their rent is. We add all these factors in, and it would just be a decision tree. We would just say, well, if their debt to income ratio is higher than X, and if that, well, then they get the loan or they don't get the loan. And so in that way, AI is really easily explainable. We would just be able to look in the code and just say, well, this is the reason why. But these machine learning forms don't do this anymore. They're actually able to have these kind of hidden, opaque layers that cut the input up into its own considerations, and then spits out an output based on all these statistical analyses and complex computer algorithms. And so what makes it so powerful is partly because we haven't had to tell it what to do, that it can actually use considerations that are not necessarily human articulable considerations. So while we all immediately think, like, how do we decide whether something's a banana or not? Well, it's yellow and it kind of has this curved shape, and maybe it has maybe it's slightly green if it's young or something like that. We would try to do all that, but we would never be able to come up with the necessary and sufficient conditions in a way that would be stable over time. Whereas the algorithm can take millions of these inputs and generate a whole list of considerations that, even if they spit it out, we wouldn't be able to understand them. And this is really why it's so powerful. It's not limited to our way of reasoning. And so that's why I think it's always going to be really difficult to get explainable AI. We might come up with partial explanations. For example, there's some great work being done on counterfactual explanations. I think you've interviewed Sandra Faulkner on an earlier episode, and where she talks about her counterfactual explanations, which are really interesting. They give you they give you one thing, like, well, if this person was white, would they get the job? And then it's able to find out, was the color of their skin used as a consideration? That's really nice, but it's not the same as knowing exactly what went into that decision. Because we, in order to get a full explanation, we need all the considerations that went into that decision. So I don't think we're going to have it both ways, that we're going to be able to have this powerful machine learning and have the explanation that would be required to establish meaningful human control. I don't think that's really possible. I think we'll always get parts of it, but it will never be sufficient.
I mean, could we just explore that in a bit more depth, though? Because I think, like, part of the argument from people like Sandra Faulkner, and there's some others out there as well, is, I guess, a corollary of the point that you made earlier on, which is that, you know, we care about decision or explanations in particular contexts. And I think the point that some of these authors make is that the type or quality of explanation that we care about varies from context to context. So we don't necessarily need a full explanation of the system and all the considerations it uses. We just need to know whether it used certain limited range of factors. So if we care about discrimination in decision making, for example, we just need to know whether it relied upon one of these protected characteristics when making a decision, or some proxy for those protected characteristics. So that's all we would need to know. And maybe the counterfactual decision making approach gives you access to at least that much information. Right. But you seem to be suggesting that we need kind of more detailed explanations in order to ensure meaningful control. So maybe you could expand or clarify that point.
Yeah. So I think you're right about what they're trying to say, and that if we could just say, well, we're worried about race and gender and sexual orientation or something like that being used because we don't want to continue marginalizing those communities. That's wrong. So maybe if we just check that, if we just get that information. But I'm a bit worried that the whole point of machine learning is it's able to detect patterns and correlations that we can't. So while we might know postcode is a correlate to race, often correlate to race and socioeconomic status, we're not going to be able to figure out all the ways that machine learning is capable of making that correlate. So we're limited in our ability to determine whether race in this situation, because we would have to be able to figure out all the ways machine learning can come up with a correlate to race and then check to make sure all those weren't used. But of course, if we could do that, we wouldn't really need machine learning anymore. So I think it's a good idea, and I don't think we shouldn't explore these ideas, but I don't think it's going to get us all the way there. And there's always going to be this nagging doubt that, well, I'm not sure how it made the decision. It could be correlated in some way to a factor that's biased, like really something we consider to be wrong. And I don't think it's necessarily worse or better if it's correlated to a factor that's just completely irrelevant. There's that famous example of the tanks that I've done some research on this. I cannot tell if this is a true example or it's made up, but it's still interesting to discuss nonetheless, where the algorithm was trying to check whether it was an enemy tank or a friendly tank. And it did a really good job in the training, but then in actuality, it did a terrible job detecting enemy tanks. And the reason was because all the enemy tanks were pictured in sunlight. In a nice sunny day, and then in real life it wasn't a sunny day, so it started performing horribly. I don't think it's not biased or racist in any way, but it's still generated based on an irrelevant factor. And so in like a hiring situation, it wouldn't be any better if the decision was based on the length of the CV versus their race. Both of them are terrible and we shouldn't be using. And so I think it's going to be hard for us to come up with not only the factors that we care about being ethically significant, but we'd also have to find the irrelevant factors and think about those in order to test for those. And I just think that's going to be too much work. We're not going to be able to do all of that.
Yeah, I think that. So the tank example, as far as I recall, comes from, was it Hubert Dreyfus wrote about it in some book, one of his books on AI?
Yeah.
At least that's the reference that I'm familiar with, and possibly a myth or maybe never happened.
Yeah, so I heard that somebody tried to track it all the way down and couldn't find the actual example existing in real life. But I don't want you to quote me on that because I'm not positive.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I find those examples amusing in that, like, oftentimes there are these kind of statistics or stories that are used to illustrate key points. And they're repeated and cited over and over again in different articles and books. And then when you actually try and hunt them down, It turns out they weren't quite what you thought they were, or hard to find whether they exist. It's just some sort of perpetual loop of people citing this story with no original source. Right. You make a few kind of key arguments in your paper, and one of those arguments has been implicit in what you were just saying, but I wonder if we could render it a bit more explicit. So one of the big claims you make then when it comes to the use of AI systems is that there's a catch, there's a kind of a catch-22 situation that arises, is that insisting upon the explainability of AI of a particular form anyway, in a sense, just defeats the purpose of using that form of AI. So this has been implicit in what you just said, but maybe you could make it explicit and explain like why there is that catch.
Right. So the argument I made in the paper about, if I'm right, that the principle of explicability is really to establish this meaningful human control, which is giving somebody the information necessary to decide whether this output is acceptable or not, ethically acceptable, then the purpose is to provide humans with this list of considerations. And then the idea would be, well, this human could see, well, is there anything irrelevant here? Does this set of considerations make sense? Should we actually be denying somebody this loan, for example, based on this explanation? Is it a good explanation? And of course, once we have a human being that's capable of doing that, we already have the knowledge of what is a good way of coming to this decision and not. We've already made that choice per se. And if we already know this, then we don't need this powerful machine learning system to make these decisions for us. We need a human to check anyways, and we already have the list of considerations that are good. So as soon as we get the explanation, we don't need machine learning anymore. And I think that's it's this odd scenario where it's like, well, yeah, if we can use machine learning as soon as we have an explanation, but then as soon as we have an explanation, we don't need machine learning anymore. And the one caveat to this is I think, well, machine learning could give us some new information. For example, there's this, instead of giving bias considerations or considerations that are irrelevant, it may also give us considerations if we could have explainable AI that we hadn't thought of before. And I think scientifically, this is where things get really interesting. And if they do that, I would hope that the human being involved would not just say, well, I don't really know, so I'm going to go along with the decision. The idea would be that those considerations should be taken as hypotheses. Like, let's test this out. Let's see if that's really a consideration we should be using. But again, that's not a live system. We wouldn't want this algorithm to be live using considerations that we don't know anything about. And it wouldn't give human beings the meaningful human control that we're after in the first place, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I think it's a kind of interesting argument and point, and that, yeah, the insisting on explicability means that, well, we need to know all the considerations that go into it, but we really only tend to use this kind of AI when we don't know all the considerations, and we try and just, I guess, rely on, as you say, just huge data sets to try and come up with some correlations and maybe reverse engineer them. I wish I knew these examples off the top of my head, but I seem to recall there being an example of this point in the scientific context where it was like a breast cancer detecting algorithm. When they reverse engineered that, they realized that it was relying on a particular factor in the images that it was scanning that they didn't rely on, that seemed to possibly be more reliable when it came to detecting breast cancer. I will try and dig that out and maybe include a link to it. It may also be that I imagined it, and that's not exactly what the story is.
Right.
but in principle, that's the kind of thing where there could be a value to this, in a scientific context, reverse engineering the system.
Absolutely. Yeah. The epistemic value is huge.
Yeah.
And I think that gives fuel to the scientific method, right? That all of a sudden this hypothesis that you didn't come up with yourself, but it's still it has a lot of evidence that it might be really useful to pursue. And I think it is being used like that, especially in the healthcare world.
Yeah. And so, but your point then is in these more ethically contentious decision making systems, like, you know, granting people credit, job applications. We can't do that kind of reverse engineering. We can't just allow it to select candidates and then say, oh, look, it's relying on this factor to select candidates, and it turns out that's maybe a more reliable factor.
There's a big difference in the two contexts we were just mentioning. In the breast cancer example, right, I think the doctors are interested, you know, the physicians are interested in the considerations it was using because they know that the algorithm was getting it right. Right? They can tell. You know, if the algorithm says you have breast cancer and you would get checked for breast cancer, they have a third way of verifying that the algorithm was correct. But in these other scenarios, we're talking about like loan rejection or best candidate for the job. There's not really this third way of verifying that the algorithm was correct, right? There's no agreed upon societal criteria that says, well, yeah, this person is the best person for the job. This is an ongoing debate. We'll continue to, that's why we have hiring committees, because it's not settled on. So it seems a bit like these contexts are inherently different, because we don't know if the algorithm is ever correct in the loan rejection one, for example.
Yeah, I mean, so I think that's right. I mean, I'm sure people will come up with criteria that they think they can use to determine whether it was right after the fact, but these would all be very contentious and highly disputed. It reminds me a bit of, this is kind of a classic point in liberal democratic political theory or Rawlsian political theory as well, which is that, you know, there are certain kinds of decision-making contexts where what we care about is the procedure through which a decision is reached, and there are other kinds of decision-making contexts where we care about the outcomes, and there's maybe a third category where we care a bit about both. And so maybe the distinction that you're drawing in your paper is that it is kind of hinging on this, that there's some contexts of decision making where what we care about is the procedure itself, because we're not sure whether we've achieved the right outcome, or we don't have clear standards for evaluating whether we've reached the right outcome. So all we can go on is whether the decision-making process was fair.
Exactly.
And so in these contexts, the deployment of AI becomes problematic. Is that
right? Exactly. Because if the procedure is really all we have to go on for evaluating whether these were good or bad decisions, then it seems odd to use a tool that can't provide us with that procedure. And in context, I think this is why AI has been so successful in healthcare. I mean, with some huge caveats, but because we in that case, we care about the outcome. Did this person actually have cancer? Was this diagnosis correct? And we can actually verify that information. So then when these articles come out saying that, well, it's right 96% of the time and doctors are only right 60% of the time, well, it seems like, well, we should use this with or without an explanation right now.
Okay. So again, this is implicitly, I guess, your second main argument in the paper is trying to get more precise about the distinction between the context in which we can use AI and which explanations are required, and the context in which we shouldn't use AI. Sorry, the context in which we can use AI because explanations are not ethically necessary, and then the context in which we can use AI because explanations... we can't use AI because explanations are necessary. I've botched the explanation of that, or the the way I've characterized that, but maybe you could go into that. So what would be some examples you discuss in the paper of like low stakes scenarios where we shouldn't be too concerned about explanations, and what's the defining feature of those? Maybe we've touched upon it already, but we can pursue it in a bit more depth.
We touched upon it a bit, and probably a bit more than I do in the paper, because I think in the paper I was just trying to give a counterexample to the idea that we need a principle of explainability. The idea was, well, if I can even show one beneficial use of AI that doesn't generate this intuition that we need an explanation, then it doesn't seem like we should have this principle of explicability. So the example I've already used about chess, the chess playing algorithm, it doesn't seem like we shouldn't have a chess playing algorithm, which I think probably teaches, even without an explanation, teaches chess players a lot about the game of chess. It doesn't seem like we should not be able to use this without an explanation. But also, much of the great achievements of AI don't seem to need explanations. For example, the speech to text is, you know, machine learning driven now, or object recognition systems, machine learning driven. No explanations are given. Also translation. I mean, probably the most useful for especially those of us living abroad. We gain all of this from artificial intelligence, and I would never think, well, I'm not going to use this translation because I don't have an explanation as to why they particularly chose this phrasing or this word to match with this word. And maybe if I was translating a book, I'd want that information. But overall, there's a lot of value here with or without an explanation. And so I think that in using this as a counterexample, or using these as counterexamples, kind of shows that, well, there might be something to this idea of explainable AI in an ethically relevant sense, but it's definitely not a principle that all AI must achieve.
So, okay, so if how meaningfully or accurately can we distinguish between kind of low stakes, low risk scenarios and high risk scenarios? So I guess one concern might be that some of the contexts which we might tend to say are, well, these are low stakes scenarios, so we don't need to insist on an explanation here, end up having kind of unanticipated harmful consequences downstream that we didn't appreciate at first, or we subsequently come to realize. Is the idea then that we should just review or revise our attitude towards them once we learn about those consequences? Or does this warrant a much more precautionary approach to the deployment of artificial intelligence?
So I'm going to go with the latter here, that we should be very careful with how we use artificial intelligence and really pay attention to the achievements. I think a lot of the explosive headlines that we see in the newspaper about AI being able to do all of these things like predict who's going to be a criminal based on their face and and all these things, they seem like are going to end terrorism and find terrorists before they know they're terrorists themselves. These are really exciting. I mean, if that could really happen, that would be very exciting. But in reality, the AI doesn't seem to be particularly good at that. We don't really have any success in those scenarios. What we have success in is some of this more boring stuff, which is really valuable. But once it's been achieved, it starts to lose the excitement in the headlines. So being able to do speech to text and those other things, they're low stakes, clearly. Now, I think you were asking, how can we really draw a line there? And the line that I'm working on drawing, I'm trying to write this new paper tackling exactly this, is that we should be using AI right now, at least in the beginning, for things that we can, in principle, verify. That doesn't mean we have to verify every single output, but we should be able to say something about its efficacy, something about how well it does. And I think a lot of these magic scenarios, like where we're using AI to hire somebody, there's no way to, in principle, verify that the AI did a good decision, a better decision than a committee or anything like that. And that seems, especially given the significance of how it affects people's lives, it seems like a weird place to start with AI. Instead, we should be using, to continue with the same example, we should be using AI to help us read people's CVs, to organize it maybe in a better way, to understand specific characteristics that we could verify. For instance, how many years of experience do they have? That's hard for a human being to figure out based on reading a CV. We can do it, but an AI may be able to automate this, make this a lot easier for us to organize considerations that we as human beings will use to evaluate candidates, rather than having the evaluating done by the machine, especially since we can't verify it. So just really in short, it's, can we verify a particular output? Can we say something about the efficacy of this algorithm? If we can't, then we shouldn't be using it right now. We should figure out a way that this makes sense ethically to do so before we do it. And right now, there isn't that way. So we should stick to what's going well for us right now. And I think that a lot of people will say, well, I'm just really putting cold water on the whole field of artificial intelligence. But I think there's plenty of room for growth and success stories. And we would stop having these terrible headlines we saw Amazon's hiring system only hiring white males because, well, guess what? It's using data from the past. And in the past, they hired and promoted white males. And so that's how they defined success. And those things are actually hurting. Those headlines are hurting AI. So we need some more positivity. And I think we should start with things that we can actually say something about regarding how good they are. How good they work.
Yeah, and so I mean, this is something you have in your bio on your webpage, that you're a proponent of boring AI, as you say. But I guess part of your point here is that what we classify or call boring AI is maybe a bit more exciting and interesting than people might think.
Yeah, it's a lot more helpful than we. I mean, just translation. How often I use that in my everyday life? I get government documents from the Netherlands that. Well, without translation, I would be hunting down somebody that could speak both Dutch and English that I trusted, and it would take me a long time. Now I can just scan the document and get it translated enough to where I know what I need to do. And that's a little mundane, but it's really helpful. And that's without an explanation as well. I don't need any explicability for why it translated the document in that way. So I think there's a lot of good to be achieved, whether it's boring or not. It's a lot of good to be achieved. And I think there's also a lot of room for growth in AI being able to do these things. And if we focus on those, if AI developers focus on those things rather than these magic bullet scenarios, then they're not going to only have a lot more success, but they're going to avoid some of the huge negative headlines that we've been seeing recently as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite impressed actually by the improvements in translation, even from, you know, when this Google Translate first came out, when you started using it, to now, it's just quite impressive how much you can get from something. And as you say, it is really practically useful to use on a day-to-day basis. Maybe just like one last question on this idea of boring AI. So like the position you outline makes a lot of sense to me. I wonder if you'd be willing to speculate or say anything on why there is such a call to use AI in these more traumatic cases like predicting crime or predicting successful job candidates or, I don't know, predicting successful U.S. presidents. It might do that as well. Who knows, right? It seems to me that these are, I guess these are things that humans care about historically. Mm. But the reality is that they're really hard problems, and it's not obvious that using AI, the assumption is that maybe because AI can accumulate, aggregate, and process lots of data, maybe it'll be better than humans at doing this.
Right.
But the reality is that maybe there's just something very intrinsically unpredictable or difficult about predicting future human behavior. And you know, there could be philosophical reasons for this that I probably don't agree with, to do with like free will or something like that. But right. Even if that's not true, it's just such a highly complex phenomenon that we're never really going to be able to successfully do it, even with technological aids.
Well, and if we look at the current situation we're in with coronavirus, we found algorithms can't adapt very fast. They kind of get this picture of how we live and how we work and how we travel and use transport. But when then something changes pretty significantly, we're able to adapt in our minds and understand what's going on. But the AI significantly fails. It's good at a fixed target, not a moving target. But I think this fascination that you were referring to with trying to do these really exciting things like determining who's going to commit a crime and things like that, it seems to be just a quick solution to systemic problems. And it also kind of, you know, delegates this reasoning. It's so difficult to figure out these problems. So if we can just give it enough data, maybe it'll come up with a better reason than us and better outputs than us. Of course, the issue with this, I mean, just to stick with the predictive policing one, is not only that, well, the data has to come from somewhere. So it's not just, you know, abstracting humans from the equation. And in the past, at least in my home country of the United States, policing hasn't been that great. So we feeding it data about the past is probably not going to help decisions in the future. But also, because this situation is so difficult, I think it passes off. It kind of feels like you're taking a weight off your own shoulders. Look, the algorithm's doing it and has lots of data, and it processes things way faster than us and can handle way more information than us. So I don't have to feel that weight. So, you know, if it tells me to arrest somebody, I just go arrest them. Like, it's not on me. I don't carry that moral burden that I once had. Now, hopefully researchers have done enough to show that this is not the case. Like, you should carry that moral burden simply in virtue of using an algorithm to do this. But I can see the desire. I understand the desire to do these really fanciful things that I guess we should, if we paused for a second, we probably would understand that, yeah, that's not going to work. But I get that, well, not only the desire to achieve progress in these systemic problems, but also in a more cynical way, a lot of these things get more funding. They're more exciting to talk about. They seem to push the boundaries of what we thought was possible. So not only in the academic world you get funding, but there's private companies that stand to make a lot of money. The predictive policing world has made vast sums of money on this stuff. So I think there's a couple things driving it.
Yeah, I suspect it's partly, taking responsibility is hard, and it's kind of comforting maybe to outsource some of this moral burden to a machine. There's probably also economic considerations. I think a lot of predictive policing systems early on got a foothold kind of post the 2008 crash when there was mm-hmm. cutbacks. So there's economic factors as well. But just an observation, and you can comment on if you like. So something that's come up in previous conversations that I've had with people on predictive analytic systems that are used in, let's say, child welfare settings or in crime settings is that, well, these algorithms are intervening in the wrong part of the system. So they're intervening at the very end of a process, like decisions about how much punishment somebody should get or whether they should be released from jail or whether they should be directed to child services or not, or you know, whether they should be taken away from their parents or not, or something like that. But actually, we should be intervening much earlier on because of there are systemic biases and structural injustices in the system that are baked in by that point. And using an algorithm at that point in the process just exacerbates those systemic biases and structural injustices. But I would suggest maybe the conclusion from your observations here is that even intervening earlier in the process with any kind of predictive behavioral system would be problematic, and we should be very cautious about doing that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't think that is a good delegation of roles and responsibilities between human and machine. I think that humans we're going to constantly have a debate, for instance, about the best way to raise a child in any scenario. That's going to be an evolving debate. It's going to go on forever. And not just it's going to go on forever because there's inherently no right answer. It's going to go on forever because the world is changing. And so the way that we raise our kids is going to be mediated by the technologies that we're in, the environment that we have, the political systems that we have. So we need to constantly talk about this. There's no algorithm that's going to solve it for us and be true for the rest of time. And the only way we can talk about it is if we're making these value judgments ourselves and we know what they are. And algorithms aren't good at doing that. Algorithms are good at finding, at automating things that we can verify in principle, but it would take us a long time to do. And so if we're going to use, that doesn't mean we shouldn't be using it in healthcare settings or child rearing settings or anything else. It's just that what are we using them for? And I think detecting things that we can verify, maybe we're detecting, I hate speculating about like possible uses, but if we're, you know, we're using images to detect, you know, is a kid being beaten or does a kid feel emotionally look like they're being hurt in some way? And then you could actually verify that in some way. You could detect whether they were doing that, but it might point us in the right direction to start making these evaluations ourselves. It's not going to come to the conclusion that a child should be taken away from their family, but it might detect things that we should look further into. And there's a lot of room there. So I don't understand why we're trying to jump to the moon right away instead of taking these steps that could help us right now.
Okay, I think that's probably a good place to leave the conversation. Thanks for joining me today, Scott.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. It was a great chat.